Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. On May 24th, 2021, I'm thrilled that you're here with us today. And we do appreciate it. As you know, we're now the voice of the American Consortium for Equity in Education over at ace-ed.org, and our podcasts are all over there, as well as all of our magazine issues, et cetera, of our online journal called Equity and Access. We'll have a new issue up this week, all right, as we get the June issue up there. So it's a good week for us, and we hope you go over there, check it all out. Everything we do over there is all about equity at ace-ed.org. You're invited to the party. Everything's free for pre-K-12 educators. We want your voice to be heard, so please check it out. We're proud of what we do, and we're doing a darn good job of it, and it's all with you in mind. Got a nice show for you today. All right, we've got my good friends from Fielding International. Jill Akers Clayton is here. And we've got also from Sun. Good morning, darling. How are you? I was going to introduce Kurt, but I'll go right to you. Good morning, Jill.
Hello, okay. Good morning. Sorry about that.
Yeah. No, that's okay. Are you talking right into your phone?
Yes, hello? I am. Hold on. Let me turn off my Wi-Fi, and maybe that'll be better for us.
We'll see.
There we go.
I don't know. I hope I don't want anybody to miss a single word of my friend Jill, okay, from Fielding International. All right, we're going to get back. Well, you're putzing around over there. Let me – hey, Kurt, you there?
Good morning, Larry. How you doing?
I am fine, Kurt Mold. How are you today?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Good, good, good. It's my pleasure. Okay, how's life in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, where for the school district you are the digital media innovation and strategy compliance guy? That's what I've got here. Is that what your title is? Talk to me, Kurt.
Close. Yeah, digital media innovation and strategy director. You got it.
Director. Thank you. Thank you. What does that mean? Talk to me about that. What do you
do? Everybody asked the same question. So
actually, I don't care. It's your superintendent who said, when you got Kurt on the phone, ask him what he does all day. So there you go. Go ahead, Kurt.
Yeah, we, you know, I see everything over, you know, technology-wise, so infrastructure to equipment in the hands of kids in the classroom, in the hands of teachers in the classroom. That's the digital media side. You know, it's not technology because it's not about the tech. It's about what teachers and kids do with it, which is why it's digital media. Innovation is about being a beloved agitator, finding ways to improve the system, to break the system, to take the pieces of rubble and reconstruct it in new and meaningful ways for the kids. And strategy is to do so in a way that's strategic, that it fits within the broader scope of the overall mission of the system.
Yeah. It's so good. And before we go back to Jill, Sun Prairie is right near Madison, Wisconsin. Okay? And tell people
immediately
about
to the
Sun,
east.
Yeah, thank you. And tell a little closer to Milwaukee. Okay? And tell people what Sun Prairie is like and what your school district is like.
Yeah, Sun Prairie is, we've got 8,500 kids in 15 schools about to open up. A new high school that our partners at Fielding helped us design. Yeah, it's going to be beautiful. And, you know, we serve a mix of communities. We have everything from what you may consider to be urban, so dense population, you know, mix of diversity in all aspects and elements of the word. You know, we have, you know, 30% students of color, actually closer to 35% students of color. You know, 35% free and reduced lunch. And then the very far reaches of our community are farmland, very agricultural. You know, what you would think about rural Wisconsin is what you see. So we've got, in 85 square miles, so our footprint is enormous here in the state.
Yeah, it really is, and it's a nice town. I've been there, okay, many, many times. I used to live down in Chicago and up in near Rockford, so I used to go there all the time, and it is very, very, very pretty place. And you got a new high school. Jill, tell us all about Fielding International, and then feel free to expound about the new high school in Sun Prairie and what you guys did for it. Jill Akers Clayton, everybody.
Sun Prairie is a phenomenal place. You what?
No, go ahead, Jill. Go, speak.
I was going to say Sun Prairie is a phenomenal place. I think that, you know, our work is always to go in and think about design and designing with equity practices in mind, and how do we create the resources that all of Kurt's students will need and really respond to the diversity and provide successful inclusion in their education for all students and for all teachers, and really thinking about what are the resources and concrete targets that we need to provide, giving all of his students those priorities in secondary and upper secondary education and those resources. And so, again, really looking at what kids need in the future, learning communities, learning commons where kids have agency, they can find what's relevant to them, really, you know, readjusting the timetable and mapping out what education should look like for students who are entering into the workforce, who are entering into higher education. So Fielding spent quite a bit of time just working alongside Kurt and reimagining what all of those spaces could look like to support those students.
And, Jill, go into that a little bit deeper. Kurt, and you chime in too, okay? You know, you work besides Kurt, and you work besides other in administration, the teachers as well, all right? And you reimagine, okay, within an equity framework, and we're going to talk about that at Sun Prairie, how education's going to work. But you folks are school designers at Fielding International, all right? And it may seem to people that you design a space that is a classroom. Okay, and what's that got to do with equity, and what the heck do you have to work with Kurt for? Okay, because you know, all you're doing is designing a space. So just go in a little deep and talk about what, you know, it's easy to say all that, but what do you actually do when you talk about that? I'm going to start with Jill and then ask Kurt how it works the other way. Jill, talk about those conversations. Equity,
sure,
design, yeah, that kind of thing.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, we'll let Kurt speak to more of this, but I'll start off with it. We embrace the professional responsibility, just like Sun Prairie does, to really interrupt the systemic racism that occurs and to collaboratively dismantle and rebuild and align new school buildings that are not double-loaded corridors with, you know, entering in one classroom where students lose their voice, but really designing an ensemble or a kit of spaces that allow students to build partnerships with each other and collaboratively start to disrupt the bias and systemic racism that is embedded into a lot of our school systems. And those are, you know, knowing that education is the key role in determining how you spend your adult life, we have to start to really think about what it is to create a more equitable environment for students. And that's really closely tied to personalized learning and understanding that each student's individual needs and designing those educational experiences help each individual student achieve success. So equitable is not necessarily equal classrooms, but really providing the support through master schedules, giving students different opportunities and expectations, different ways of completing assignments, different resources and accommodations that don't necessarily make a classroom equal, but provide spaces that give students more support, more time, schedules that are more equitable to reach those greater needs. That includes teachers having materials and resources and the training to understand all that it takes to provide equity and access that enables all students to succeed. And I think that that's our number one goal when we go in to really dismantle the original school building design. And then I'm going to hand it back off to Kurt to really talk about what that was like on the ground working with teachers in his space.
And I just have to say something before I go to Kurt. You mentioned how scheduling, the master schedule, makes a difference. And this morning at 9 a.m., this is my 10:30 show, this morning at 9 a.m., again, May 24th, I did a whole show about the challenges of scheduling, master scheduling, and equity. First time we ever did a show on that. It's funny you would bring that up. And I had, of all the shows we have done, I have never done a show on that. It opened my eyes to it. I'm so glad you brought that up, Jill. And that's the first.
Oh, I can't wait to go listen to it. That's awesome.
Go listen to it. It's really good. It's really good. There was just a study, not to divert here, at Columbia University. And they used the folks at a place called Able Schools, which ableschools.com, okay, who are consultants in that field. Okay, and all about an operational approach to equity. It's really interesting. I have to do a plug for that, but everybody will enjoy that show. Again, it's May 24th, okay, and it was the 9 a.m. show. Pardon my little snuffles here, all right? And I didn't mean to divert there over there. Kurt, talk about that from your point of view, the design of the school and equity, and if you want to bring in racial inequity or however you want to do that, be my guest.
Yeah, Larry, thanks. Jill, that was a great answer and a great segue here.
Yeah, it was.
We struggle with the achievement gap, and then the response to the achievement gap has traditionally been to double down on the practices that and triple down, quite frankly, on the practices that we know have gotten to this place. So watered down inauthentic experiences in the classroom, only validated and verified by highly biased and questionable assessments that are given at one point in time that do not measure or allow for the true humanity of every individual student to appear in the learning space. And so as a response to that, what do you do? What needs to look different? And that was the conversation that we had with Fielding about the building started with that question. Right? What needs to be different? If you're going to humanize your pedagogy or humanize the learning experience, if you're going to get beyond just culturally responsive where, the kids actually have a voice and a choice, what does that need to look like? But you move from culturally responsive to culturally sustaining where indigenous languages, where, students have a chance to survive and thrive within the context of their own culture, that their culture has a space as well, not just the student, but the culture. When you move from responsive pedagogy to sustaining pedagogy, and you build that around the humans that are in that space, what does it need to look like? And space matters. Space absolutely matters.
Talk about
just like
that.
The master
expound
schedule matters.
That. Yeah, expand
well,
on that.
Well, if I take kids and I say to them, your voice matters, but then I seat them all in desks and rows, and they're only facing one direction, and that direction is towards a whiteboard, and that whiteboard is controlled by one person, that clearly communicates that voice does not matter in that space. But if I have mobile seating that's comfortable, that is more akin to a living room, that is lightweight, that can be rearranged quickly by any size body and any ability body, that I can go from this space to this space to connect with this student or with this learning facilitator or with this teacher, and it's not controlled and it's not dictated, doesn't mean that there's no rules and it doesn't mean there's a free-for-all.
Of course.
There are norms, and there are norms for behavior, and there are norms that are established in that space, but those norms are built around the expectation that the burden of the learning, of the growth, of the academics is on the shoulders of the student and not the teacher to deliver and the student to regurgitate, but the heavy lifting of the thinking is on the student. But that learning, we know this from language studies, it happens peer-to-peer. Me talking to my grade and age-alike peer, sharing ideas that are relevant, arguing, having a discourse, disagreeing thoughtfully, maturely, with the ideas and the artifacts and the relevant points in the middle, right? Like that is where the authentic learning takes place. Being able to write and produce. And a part of my work in digital media is to expand the definition of writing, right? So reading and writing is no longer books and words on a page, right? Reading is gaining understanding and writing is producing meaning. Well, you can produce meaning through multimedia, through a radio podcast, through a meme, you can create a video, or, hey, you can write an essay, right? So we need kids to have the opportunity to authentically create meaning from the things that they are learning. And that is best done in situations where kids can freely and openly share with one another, that there's not a sage on the stage dictating, you know, the means and the methods and the modes by which learning happens. But the skills are known, the indicators of quality are known, but the ways and the means in which kids get to those outcomes can be as varied as the child doing the work.
Well said, my friend. I must ask, all that is just wonderful. It truly is. And I know Fielding well, and I know the great schools that they put together. But once you're in the classroom and you design the space properly, which I know you guys are doing, we'll talk about that. All right. How do you get this across to your, and I'm going to say wonderful, more than likely, wonderful educators, your classroom teachers and all the folks that help them? They're in this new space. It's probably different looking. Okay. Mm-hmm. It has all these wonderful attributes that you talked about, et cetera. And I know that the school district, I'll just say the administration, and I know they've worked with the teachers, have this in mind. But now you have to make it work. How do you facilitate that down to the folks who are responsible for doing that, i.e. your classroom educators?
Yeah. Yeah, that's where the rubber meets the road, right, Larry? So
that's right.
And Jill and I have had this conversation many, many times, and she's been a great thought partner in this work.
I'll bet.
You know,
yeah. She is great.
You know, everything that I previously said is all theory, right? Everything moving forward is practice and really gets to this idea of hearts and minds.
Exactly. Well,
and
that was well put, yeah.
And we, you know, the idea here is that wherever you're at now as a teacher, and this is, and I'm coming from a positivist assumption that teachers are in the role that they're in because they truly love and want to see children grow.
We would hope.
And you come from that mindset, it's okay. Wherever you're at, it's okay as long as you don't stay there. And so for us to be able to put out in front of students and then put out in front of teachers, here are some ideas around how you might use this space. Let's start with a lesson, right? So today, you know, these accordion doors that open and close between classrooms. So instead of 25 kids, you now have 50 kids in one large space, right?
Right.
Let's try one activity where kids can freely move between those classrooms. And then let's ask the kids, what worked well? What didn't work well? Right? And you start with the qualitative data. Let's talk about the experience that we created, because that's the hearts and the minds. The data is not going to be there day one. It's just not, and it'd be foolish to think that. It will be there eventually, but it's not going to be there day one. But ask the kids. Talk to the kids. What is the experience that we want to create? Know what the experience is that you're trying to create. What happens if I allow for 5 different choice projects to demonstrate mastery of a particular standard? What would that look like for kids to move freely throughout the building for 2 days within this period of time, right? You put simple constraints around it, and then you just test it. You dip your toe in the water. How did it go? What did the kids think about it? What were the outcomes? And you collect that data. So, again, you start where you are, but you can't stay there. You have to try things, and then after you try things, and it gets to this idea that's been around in education for years, like small-scale action research. It's really what this is. My kids are saying they want this experience. I've got this particular outcome, and I've got to find a way to close the gap with some different ways of thinking about it. So I'm going to test it out, and then at the end, I'm gonna collect the data. And the kids will tell you what they want. The kids will share how it worked. They'll be brutally honest. They'll be frank.
Yeah.
You know, I liked it when. I really didn't like it when this happened. But they will tell you. They will tell you what it is that, you know, gives you feedback around the setup of that activity. But just small, and the expectation is that you try. And we'll be behind you 100%, right? Failure forward is fine, right? Failure through not moving is not.
Hear, hear. Well said. I love that. This is just great. You know, Kurt, and you know this certainly, there is an equity framework that the Sun Prairie Schools have created. And you know, and
yes.
It's wonderful. All right, I hope it all works out, et cetera. All right, and I know this when Jill sent me some prep work for this show. All right, let me just say this. Jill, when you look at the equity framework as a senior learning designer for Fielding International, you and your team, all right, you look at the equity framework. You have to design a school. How do you do that? Just give the quick lesson. Obviously, you can't explain your years of experience, but you know what I'm saying. How do you match a design to the intent of a framework, my friend?
Absolutely.
Jill?
Absolutely. And I think this equity framework is no longer the fringe movement. You know that.
Oh, it isn't.
This is efficacy, and why this is the recognized academic and business way of educating the right way for the future. And so, in order to do that, we've changed to learning communities, and each learning community has between 100 and 150 students, with 4 to 6 teachers who work as a team. So this group, this entire team, including students and these 6 to 8 teachers who are literally working in a completely new way, are distributed in an area that contains a variety or various spaces that permit up to, you know, 19, 20 modalities of learning compared to the 2 modalities that you find in a typical classroom in a corridor model of a school. And so we have to build out through training and through development of teachers over time,
sure,
the ability to implement that framework within these new spaces, because we know that our students are not going to be problem solving and using the creative skills that our world desperately needs through that strength of character in these old antiquated systems, which only allow, as Kurt said, you know, rows of desks that have, you know, the space underneath for your books, which we call their own little cell within the Cells and Bells model. But we really have to equip our students within these learning communities, as well as equip teachers to work as a team. And that's how we start to, through that training, an open and honest dialogue, really look at and optimize all of the requirements that we need to build out these systems of equity. And that includes school funding and procurement for reimagining how we support school building finance. And so it goes, that equity framework, and what's brilliant about Sun Prairie is not only is that equity framework designed for teachers and students, but it's designed for public-private partnerships, looking at school construction and looking at the investments. So not only is the master schedule or master timetable a priority in the equity framework, construction timetables are a priority in that equity framework. And that's something that our learning community model not only elevates and levels up that ability to implement the equity framework. Folks like Kurt and his team at Sun Prairie, they're doing it all the way through and through their entire system.
They are indeed. Kurt, explain what Jill just said about the community involvement, if you can, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, our equity framework was not the byproduct of a handful of white men holed up in a room talking about where we want to see the system go. It's a byproduct of almost 70 community-wide interviews with hundreds and hundreds of stakeholders. It was developed through partnerships with our African-American Parent Network, with the Superintendent's Equity Council. You know, it's a byproduct of the voice of our community. And
nice.
So we know
nice.
A couple of things generally
nice.
About Sun Prairie. It's growing and it's diversifying, and the voice of our community is very clearly articulated throughout the equity framework. At the same time as we're diversifying, as I mentioned, we're growing. And so we have to build around that framework, right? And so how does that vision for equity and humanized pedagogy actually have to live out in the design of the spaces? And we're trying to capture that in the spaces that we've built. And I feel that, you know, we've got the basis of design for the future of education here in Sun Prairie. And we're very excited to see how the space can actually afford an equitable learning experience for teachers and our students.
That's really interesting. It is going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. Knowing Fielding, they're figuring out that if it doesn't play out exactly this way, we've designed it so we can play it so the way it works. Okay, the way what we need. I know the gang. All right, it's really going to be interesting. I have a note here again from Jill that you folks were holding space. I'm going to read this exactly for culturally responsive practices to help teachers align to equity. You have to explain that sentence to me. Holding space for culturally responsive practice. What does that mean?
That's a great way to put it too. So
yeah.
We have a boardroom
to
classroom.
You did, but I need an explanation. Thank you, Jill. Now Kurt, give the explanation.
It's a line of sight from boardroom to classroom. So our community requirements of our school district are lived out through our school board, publicly elected officials. What the board expects all the way down through the entire organization has a line of sight to the expectations of our building leaders and our classroom leaders. And so that equity framework actually plays out in the study of culturally relevant practices for all staff. So this year we have spent, even through the pandemic, an entire year studying Zaretta Hammond's work. Next year, the Ready for Rigor framework will be a requirement within our system, within our lesson
plan.
My
favorite word, rigor. Go for it. Yeah, go ahead. I love it.
It's a multi-year approach to actually bring to life the expectations for culturally relevant practices. And ultimately, the work of leaders in our system is to create the conditions. Remember, like, I'm not in a classroom. All I can do is support teachers and hopefully, bring to manifest the work that we'd like to see. But you have to allow for and create the conditions for others to do their work. That's the role of the leader, because we're not in that classroom. Yep. And ultimately, the space between a teacher and a student is where that change happens, is where that magic happens. And so that's where we want to get into with our culturally responsive work, is actually into that space between teacher and student, so that we can see that change actually manifest in the outcomes and the relationships and the sense of belonging and the sense of identity of our kids in classrooms.
All right, all well said, but I needed a little bit more help on it, okay? And I'm just asking because I don't understand it completely. Okay, let me throw it to Jill. Jill, holding space for culturally responsive practices. Now, I know you and your team, okay, and you literally design space for that, all right? But what does that mean as you actually make that? What does that actually mean? And I understand what Kurt said, okay, which makes sense. But I'm talking about the actual, if I may, physical, if there is such a thing, manifestation of it. Okay, you design that. Go for it, Jill.
So I think when we talk about, culturally sustainable practices that are responsive and relevant, we spend a lot of time at the large systemic strategic level talking about changing systems and practices based on district-wide data review, and teachers are given a lot of data points, and they're told to really identify specific areas that represent those systemic barriers to racial equity, that they're required to become the focus of change at the district, at the school, and at the classroom level. And what we mean by holding space, it's the time that's carved out during the day to utilize a small group room or a seminar room and to talk about how we do this. How we do this as a team of teachers, really thinking about how we eliminate racial disparity and social disproportionality in all aspects of the classroom. So holding space means we're having these deep heart and mind conversations with teachers to help them understand the different ways they can allow students to hold space and time through the understanding of pedagogy and how we're humanizing that even through language acquisition strategies, we don't typically, and we haven't typically done that for students who are come from underrepresented communities, people of color, Native and Indigenous cultures, all of our communities in that sense. So by holding space means we provide small spaces, quiet spaces, collaborative spaces, reflective spaces to where our teachers have the opportunity to engage in what we call the evidence of impact conversations. And if we don't provide the physical spaces for teachers to have these conversations, which can be really challenging to breaking down these systemic barriers or understanding their own and identifying their own barriers to engaging in these conversations, then they have a really hard time holding space for students in the same way. And so it's not so much about the hiring practices and who I'm bringing in and changing the systems and practices. And yes, we have to change those, but it's about holding space and providing the spaces to engage in these conversations if we're truly going to eliminate the disparity between all aspects of the classroom and the school and the district and underrepresentation in various learning programs and people in school.
Well said. That was good, Jill. You did a good job on that one, okay? It made a lot of sense, okay? I have to ask you this, Kurt, and I know you deal with your complete executive team, all right? But when you guys hire, this is kind of a half-funny question because I know Fielding so well, okay? But when you hire a design firm, an architectural firm, to design a school, all right, and but they really understand education, okay, and how it's changing these days, and I know Fielding does, all right. Were you surprised that they were so involved in designing for pedagogy as opposed to just designing? Did it surprise you? I mean, I was curious about that because I know them well enough that it wouldn't surprise me. But I would imagine if you have a goal in mind and the firm has to reflect that. What your thoughts?
I don't think it was a surprise. And maybe I can go back to the beginning and talk about when Sun Prairie recognized the need for a second high school. We also recognize that this is likely going to sit anywhere between a $100 and $200 million bond. And ultimately, we settled on around $165 million to ask the community to support the building and the remodeling and the construction for the future of our system.
Yep.
And that is not a small ask. $165 million is a huge sum of money to be distributed amongst the tax burden on a community. And so it's our job as district leaders to get that right. And we interviewed, I would say, the equivalent of the best design firms nationally, of which Fielding was one of them. We talked to firms that had psychologists that they brought to the table with fancy titles and pedigrees. And at the end of the day, what settled it for us is that we were confident that Fielding could provide for us two things. One, a portfolio of work of others who had lived at the fringe of the future of design in school. So we would not be in this alone, but we could draw from the portfolio and the network that Fielding has created of other innovative designs, right? So building an innovative building is one thing. Knowing how to occupy it well is another thing.
Yeah.
And that
well
is
said.
What
that's good.
For us, that network with Fielding was of paramount importance. The second was that a learning designer was the person who did the pitch to our system. Now, we had James Seaman, who is the principal architect at Fielding, and one of the four principals there. He was there. He talked to us about architectural renderings, but the learning designer that came with that team was the one who could speak to the teachers and speak to the practitioners in the room and say, the future of education is upon us. It's already here. It's just not evenly distributed. You want to be a part of this. Here is how this is going to end up looking in Sun Prairie. And for somebody to understand pedagogy and speak to pedagogy first was for us the thing that tipped the scales.
That is an excellent answer, and I thank you for that. I didn't ask, is the school finished, Kurt? Is it done?
It is not. It is. We plan to occupy in probably April of next, a year from now. Yeah, we've gone on several tours. It's some spaces have drywall and some spaces still have open roof, but our construction company is moving along, and it's beautiful.
And what's the name of the school? Do they know yet?
It will be Sun Prairie West High School. So and that's the other thing. Sun Prairie is growing so fast. We had just built, and it's about 12 years old now, Sun Prairie High School. That will become Sun Prairie East, and the second high school will become Sun Prairie West.
So the kids who are now, let me get this down, the kids who are now on the same football team, that's possible, will be playing each other
as
a big rivalry in a couple of years.
Kids who are freshmen now on the same team may be playing each other in a rivalry game in a couple of years from now. Exactly.
Wow, that's going to be fun. I won't even ask you who you're going to root for. Going to root for. But.
My children will both attend the new high school.
West. Obviously West. Okay, very good. We got to go. This was wonderful as usual, Jill. Fantastic. Thank you.
Pleasure, Larry. I hope your wife
soon. And you can talk fine. You said you couldn't talk before. You're doing great. That was beautifully done. And Kurt, you're terrific. I really enjoyed having you on today. You really know your stuff.
Hey, thanks, Larry. I appreciate the time, and it's great to be here.
Goodness. My pleasure, and I got news for you. The audience's pleasure, too, so thank you all. Both of you, take care. Stay safe, okay? Thank you.
All right. Be well.
Take
care.
Bye. All right. Jill Akers-Clayton from Fielding International, my good friends. Okay, fieldingintl.com. They do great work. Okay, and Kurt Mold, who at Sun Prairie Schools, who's their Digital Media Innovation and Strategy Director. Okay, good stuff. Smart people. We'll archive at ace-ed.org. Go over, see what we do in our Consortium for Equity. Thanks for listening.